everyone in the U.S. had a great Thanksgiving. I know mine was rather interesting, I will say that. I need to apologize, of course, for the delay of episodes this week. I haven't done an episode since, I don't even know, last week sometime. And I've been planning on it, but it just keeps getting pushed back. My work schedule is just ridiculous this time of year. So I apologize for that. There will be episodes every day for the next couple of days. So we've got this episode today. I'll be talking about some news. And if you hadn't guessed by the title, it has to do partially with delayed books. So we'll get to that in a second. Tomorrow I'll be back. I'll be doing a catch-up on comics episode in which I'll talk about some of my favorite books from a couple weeks ago. So for that, I'll be talking about Road of the Dead, Highway to Hell, number one. Marvel Knights 20th, number one. James Bond 007, number one. Green Lantern, The Green Lantern, number one. And Outer Darkness, number one. Then on Saturday, and The Empty Man, number one. On Saturday, or Sunday's episode, I'll be talking about Electric Warriors, number one. Thor, number seven. Infinity Dark, number two. Bitter Root, number one. And one of my favorite things I've read this entire month, The Stone King, number one, a Comixology original. And then Monday I'll be back with regular episodes, as I'll be talking about, I'll be catching up on my comics over the weekend. I'll be doing the Top of the Pile on Monday, and then we should be back on a regular schedule. So the next episode after that will be on Wednesday. All right, without further ado, let's talk about the main topic of this episode before I get to some other bits of news. And so the first thing I want to talk about is some cancellations, some solicitation changes, I guess you could say. And this stemmed kind of from the changes made to Batman and the Outsiders number one, which was supposed to be coming out in December, but now is not coming out until March, And there's a couple things that happened over the week that had me thinking a little bit about the way that comic books are scheduled. And, you know, Batman and the Outsiders is not the only book that's been delayed. I mean, I talk about delays, I feel like, way too often on this podcast. And I don't want to sound like a broken record sometimes, so I don't talk about all the books that are changed. But I find some of these changes kind of interesting. And before I talk about Batman and the Outsiders, there's a few other books that were delayed. Interestingly enough, but not surprisingly, Doomsday Clock number 8 has been pushed back from this coming week until December 12th. Batman Dam number 2 was pushed back from the 5th until December 12th. I think partially the reason for that is there were some rewrites that had to be done in that book. I'm assuming based on the bat penis controversy from whatever long ago that was, like 2 months it seems like now. And of course the book did really, really well, so it's not a sales thing, but DC, I guess, doesn't want any more bat penis. And you know what? I'm just happy to talk about bat penis on this podcast because bat penis, bat penis, bat penis. The final book that was delayed is Shazam, which that kind of makes me sad. It's originally going to be put out on the 5th of December for number 2. That's been pushed back to the 19th of December, and then it was pushed back again to the 23rd of December. And I find that the most curious, because I'm trying to figure out, like, just what the hell's going on over there? What is going on at DC Comics? And, you know, I understand that comics get delayed all the time, right? This is not anything new. If you've been reading comics for longer than a couple of months, actually, you know what, lately, maybe even a couple of weeks. But if you've been reading comics for a long time, you know that comics get delayed all the time. And it's not something that we should be happy about. And maybe it's not something that we should complain about either. So I want to talk about both of those things. And of course, if you want to reach out to me and tell me your thoughts on book delays, you can, of course, reach me on Twitter, at Geekvine. You can email Comic Talk. But what's my email address? God, I wish I remembered. Oh, yeah, that's right. yell@comictalk.today. And I do check that fairly often. I haven't checked it in like 2 weeks. So if you've emailed me, I'd apologize. All right. So this is not anything new, right? We've had comic books being canceled and delayed since comic books started, right? 80-plus years ago, 100 years ago. And so it's not anything new, but it seems like as comics become more mainstream, and by mainstream I mean you have other types of media kind of either replacing or living alongside comic books. For example, nowadays being mostly TV and film, which, I mean, they are everywhere. I was actually thinking about it the other day. Basically, every comic book or every TV show that I watch is a comic book show, except for like two or three, which is crazy. But of course, it makes sense because I love comics so much, right? And then with movies, I mean, we have nowadays, I don't know, three or four a year. God, when I was growing up, we'd be lucky to get like one in a decade, you know? And if you're a little bit older than me, you might not even get that. Might not even get that. So anyways, so the commercialization, I guess you could say, of comics has, for some reason, brought along more delays than usual. And, you know, for some companies, to me, it's almost become a little bit of a joke, in case you could say that. And if anyone from Black Mask is listening to this podcast, then I apologize, but it's not really a secret. You know, Black Mask is kind of known for this. And part of the reason for it is it's a small publisher. They have limited resources. And, you know, I understand that if, for example, Zach and Lonnie are working on a Marvel book, which of course they have been, and their Black Mask book gets delayed, I understand why that would happen, right? I mean, I'm sure that, you know, them working on, say, the Apocalypse storyline that was a backup on the X-Men Black books would maybe cause them to say, hey, I'm going to put this other book aside for now until I finish this one because I'm on a schedule for this. I'm getting paid. This is a for-hire work. And, of course, it's going to sell a lot more copies than, say, Come Into Me would. So I totally understand that kind of thing happening. And I'm not knocking those creators or that particular publisher in general, but I just want to make that as an example of the type of thing that I'm talking about. And of course, this happens with other publishers. I mean, Aftershock is a company that I truly adore. I think Aftershock is probably the most underrated comic book publisher in comics right now. And I don't say that lightly. I really do genuinely mean it. And I do know folks over there, and they're extremely nice folks. So, you know, it's possible that I'm partial to that relationship. And, of course, I do an Aftershock podcast, the Aftershock Central podcast, with Ronnie and Travis and myself. And you know, we do get books for that. So that's my what do they call that? I don't know. Journalists have some kind of thing where they have to, like, state whatever other interests. And anyway, so I do have some skin in the game, I guess you could say, because I want Aftershock to succeed. And Aftershock, I think, for the most part, does very well with their publishing as well. Although there are times where a book might get delayed a week or 2 weeks, or it shows up on the schedule, and then that Wednesday comes and the book's not there, and sometimes that's not necessarily the publisher's fault. We've seen this with, like, Action Lab Danger Zone, for example. And Action Lab actually does some really interesting stuff that I really enjoy. Because a lot of the times whenever a print book that Action Lab is doing is delayed, it's actually not anything to do with Action Lab itself. It's having to do with the distribution channels, of course, that being Diamond because there's nobody else around, right? This is not like the 80s and 90s where we had multiple companies distributing comics. All we have is Diamond. And so sometimes things kind of fall by the wayside. Maybe books don't get there in time. And the cool thing about Action Lab is quite often they'll put out their book still on schedule on a particular Wednesday, but it's digital only. So you can get it on Comixology or wherever else you get your digital comics. And then, you know, whatever the delay was, usually only a week, sometimes two, then you can go to your comic shop and get the book there. And the cool thing, too, is Action Lab does quite often much cheaper pricing on their digital comics than they do on the print comics. So, for example, Erica Schultz comic that I read, 12 Devils Dancing, fantastic book, by the way. It's only two issues, but it's, you know, like six issues of content because the book was put out as kind of an oversized thing. So the first issue is the first three issues of the comic. The second issue is the last three issues of the comic. And digitally, it was $2.99, or you can buy it in print for $5.99, which either way is a great deal, right? I mean, if you're getting three issues worth of story for $5.99, fantastic deal. But a $2.99 for like an 80-page book? Holy Jesus, that's great. So I recommend you keep an eye on Action Lab. They do great stuff over there. They have some really fantastic books. I don't think all of them are for me, and I don't expect every publisher to have every book be for a particular demographic, but they do some really interesting stuff over there. And again, they kind of go around this publishing delay by putting out the digital comic when it's supposed to be out. And then when the print comes out, they say, hey, you know, sorry, whatever. This happened. We're going to put this out now. Vault has done something really interesting with their books as well, because they had some of these publishing snafus, distribution snafus with Diamond. And of course, it was not Vault's fault that the books were delayed in print. So what they did is they actually put out, instead of putting out the digital copy on time and put out the print book later, what they actually did is for a couple of books, they have a, what do they call it? Like free firsts or something like that. They added a section to their website where if a book gets delayed because of a distribution error, then the book goes on their website. You can read it for free. And then when the print comic comes out, you can go out and buy it. Now, that's, of course, an interesting tactic for a couple of reasons, because number one, it is a small publisher, and the fact that you're allowing folks to read your books when they're supposed to be out gets that word out there, right? Plus the fact that you're giving books for free gets some of the news channels to pick that story up and say, hey, go check out this book over here, and that gives you additional marketing incentive. And then, of course, you know, when the print book comes out, that's kind of the moral of the story. Then you can go ahead and check that book out in print. I think that's really fascinating as well. And it hasn't happened very often. I think it's only happened maybe 1 or 2 weeks. And they were like back-to-back weeks. But really interesting stuff over there. Now, this is not necessarily the case with big publishers, right? You know, Image used to have this problem quite a bit back in the day. And part of the reason for that is Image is not necessarily a publisher. They're almost like a distribution arm, and they help creators put out their creator-owned books with the Image logo on it, which of course gets them more views by comic book readers because it's got the Image logo on it. But Image doesn't own that book, right? They don't provide any like real services to help the book along. There's some, and they do a little bit more than some of the other indie publishers do. But basically, it's a way of marketing things and giving you connections. Right, so a lot of creators like to put out a book, and then hopefully maybe it gets picked up as a TV show or as a movie, and so that helps them along as well. But with Marvel and DC, we don't really have that, right? And part of the reason for that is both of those companies are owned by giant corporations, and this is not a chat or a rabbit hole going down the corporatization of comics or anything like that. I mean, you know, this is the world we live in, so this is the way things are. And, of course, DC's owned by Warner Brothers, Marvel's owned by Disney, and sometimes things really don't play out the way that maybe comic book fans would want it to. And I've seen, you know, people go in both directions, right? If a book is delayed, a Marvel or DC book is delayed, you have one camp that's up in arms about the fact that the book is delayed. I can't believe it. Why can't they get their crap together? I'm done reading Marvel. I'm done reading DC. And then you have folks on the other side and saying, well, like, why get up in arms? You know, the book's delayed. I want the book to be out when it's out, and I want it to be the best book that it can be. And that I understand. I understand both sides of the argument completely. And so I want to talk a little bit about both sides of the argument, because I think both sides actually have some really valid points and also some really invalid excuses as to trying to justify their points of view. So, for example, we just talked about Doomsday Clock, Batman Damned, and Shazam, but let's talk about Batman and the Outsiders. Batman and the Outsiders is a book that I grew up reading. It came out a little bit before my time as a comic book reader, but I do own that entire series. It has characters that I really enjoy, some characters that we haven't really seen a whole lot in the past few years, in particular in Rebirth. So a lot of them are coming in with the latest arcs of, for example, like Detective Comics. And it's nice to see some of these characters coming back. Of course, some of them have appeared elsewhere, right? Like in Suicide Squad, for example. But now we actually have a Batman and the Outsiders book. And judging by what we saw in the Detective Comics arc with, you know, Black Lightning and Cassie Kane and all those characters coming in, I was really excited. And part of the reason I was very excited was because of the writer of the book, which was Brian Edward Hill. Now, Brian's a really interesting character. He, from what I've seen on his Twitter account and from his interviews that he's done on podcasts, he seems like an extremely bright individual. He is a fantastic writer. He understands the writing process really, really well. He knows how to be in touch with people that read his books and answer some of those questions extremely politely, but very upfront. Right, never beating around the bush. And that's something that I really like and I really enjoy from a person. Of course, he does TV work as well, and I can't remember what TV shows that is that he works on, but he's worked on several TV shows. Of course, I'm more familiar with Brian's work from his stuff over at Top Cow. So he did, for example, Postal. He is co-writing the Cyberforce book for Top Cow. I think he's just a fantastic, fantastic writer. And he has done both, you know, superhero stuff and non-superhero stuff. But the cool thing about him is even his superhero stories are not really like typical superhero books. And I'll get to some of this when, as I go in a little bit further, because he did kind of chime in on the delay of this book. And one of the things he said is kind of like something to the effect that I don't know how many superhero comic runs I have in me. And I think that's really interesting, right? Because, you know, growing up, I would say, you know, even before I was growing up, right? So, I mean, from the 60s and 70s, when comics started to really change, right? So we went from the Golden Age to Silver Age, then you go from Silver Age to Bronze Age. You have these shifts in paradigms in comics. And the result of that is the stories become very different. The characters become very different. And the reason for that is when people are growing up reading a comic book character, they oftentimes obsess about the stories that these characters are involved in. I mean, we hear stories about comic book writers or artists or editors writing into a comic book when they're little kids, and then, you know, when they become comic book writers themselves and get to write this title, how excited they are. And you see, like, these comic book letters pop up in forums or on Twitter or wherever else. And it's fascinating to see, right? Because I think most of us feel that way in some way, right? When we're little kids, you're like, oh, I would love to see Batman do this story. And, you know, when I grow up, I want to be a comic book writer. I'm going to write this Batman story. And that doesn't always happen, right? Not everyone becomes a comic book writer. But those of you listening that actually get to do that, it's fascinating, right? And sometimes maybe it doesn't quite work out because the story that you had in your head is maybe not something that fits into the mythology of the character after all these decades, right? The story maybe you came up with when you were a little kid. I mean, by now you've had, you know, 20 years of stories and you can't quite fit it in. But, you know, you might be super happy to write the book. I remember hearing about the Justice League Dark book, right? When that was announced, how excited the writer was to do it because he loved those characters growing up. And it's something that he had been pitching to DC since before he even got to work for the publisher and how excited he was to write it. So I think that's awesome, right? To be able to live that dream. And you know, Brian Edward Hill seems like that kind of guy, but he also seems like the guy where he doesn't just want to write superhero comics, right? And we see this from a lot of folks who grow up reading comics, that when they get to write the comics that they loved growing up, they change a ton of it. Right, because they're bringing in their own experiences, and they saw what they felt work and what they felt didn't work as a kid, and so maybe they play upon certain elements that they grew up reading and change that story to fit the current state of comics, in particular with that character. And I find it fascinating that he says that he doesn't know how many superhero comic runs he has in here, because of course Batman and the Outsiders is very much a superhero comic, but I think we're seeing a really interesting shift in the comic book industry where you have a lot of writers coming in that are already writers, right? You have writers for TV shows or, you know, film writers or whatever else, novel authors coming in and writing comics. And it's not like this is brand new, right? Like we've had novel authors writing comics for decades, right? But the shift from media, right, from TV and film into comic, is I think a little more recent, a little more recent, and not like brand new. So don't yell at comictalk.today, email me and say, hey, this has been happening since the 50s. Look, I know that there's examples, but it happens more and more now. And the thing that's interesting about that is those mediums, the way you write for those mediums is very different because the audience of those mediums is very different. But comics has become different because the demographic of comics is no longer kids. Now you're writing for adults that grew up reading comics. And sure, there are plenty of comic book publishers that put out children's lines or young adult lines. They put out lines for ethnic minorities. They put out books that appeal to a female demographic. I totally understand all that. But for the majority, the folks that are reading comics are folks that have been reading comics for 10, 15, 20, 25 years plus. And so as a result, some of these folks don't want that same kind of story. Some do, of course, right? I mean, we've seen this whole Comicsgate thing where I just want my comic heroes to punch bad guys, and I want the female heroes to have their boobs popping out, right? So it's like 1993 all over again. But I think the majority of us don't want that, right? We want great stories with characters that we really love. We want those characters to grow. Sometimes we want them to change, but sometimes we just want them to grow. And by change, I mean like having somebody else replace that character, you know, like Dick Grayson becoming Batman or whatever else, things like that. It doesn't always work out, and ultimately, I think we do fall back to a status quo for a majority of reasons, but we do want our characters to change and grow and be different, right? We don't want to be retold the same stories every few years, which does oftentimes happen, by the way. We do see kind of the cyclical nature of comics once you are reading comics for, let's say, 10-plus years, because the cycles do happen in roughly 10 or 15-year increments. So we see stories popping back in all the time. But somebody like Brian Edward Hill, who has a very different take on writing when he becomes a comic book writer, he's able to bring some of that other experience and kind of change the way the format is told. I think we've seen this quite a bit with like Ta-Nehisi Coates, right? He was doing Black Panther, now he's doing Captain America. And his Captain America, I think, is probably my favorite Captain America that I've read in a very, very long time. You know, Cap was one of the first comic books that I picked up. It was like Avengers, and then a month or two after I picked up Cap, and then third comic that I picked up was Batman. And over the decades, just I haven't really been excited for Avengers. I haven't really been excited for Cap. You know, there are runs that come in and out that are really good, but overall, I just never maintained that excitement like I have with Batman. And yes, this is Batman, even including some of the Tom King stuff that I don't like. And in fact, I want to talk about the Tom King stuff. I read this really interesting article this past week about how the current Batman book is about making Bane a badass again. It's not about Batman. And once I started going through the article and thinking about everything that I read, I have a newfound understanding for what it is that is being done in that book. But we're not going to talk about that today. So, of course, you have these writers coming in from other types of media that change the format, and they tell comic stories very differently. Tom King's a great example, right? I mean, the stuff that Tom is doing with Batman, some of it I really enjoy, some of it I really hate. But I can kind of understand why he's doing what he's doing, and I do understand why people love the stuff that he does. Even if some of it I don't agree with, right? And I quit reading Mr. Miracle probably issue 5 or 6, because by that point I realized, to me, this is not a story I want to read in a monthly format. This is a story I want to read back to back. So I continued reading or picking up all the issues, but I haven't read the at least back half of the story. And now that book is done, I want to read it. But I've heard comments about the ending of the book. And of course, that ending, I think, doesn't really fit to people that would generally be attracted to a character like Mr. Miracle, right? Because Kirby would tell that character very differently. And I think this is probably true for a lot of Kirby characters, to be honest with you, because I think a lot of people that love those characters love them because of the way that Kirby told them, not necessarily because of the characters themselves. And I could be wrong, and if I'm wrong, by all means, you can tweet at me at Geekvine, email yell at comictalk.today. But this happens a lot, right? Like, you become entrenched in a character, and if somebody does something really off, then you can tell, right? You can tell. And it's not like there's not new writers popping in and writing books all the time, right? And changing things. But sometimes those things, those changes made, don't really fit with what you've come to know and love. And sometimes it takes a little while for you to understand how it fits. But, you know, people are creatures of habit, right? We're creatures of habit. So we can't just have that. We want the immediate gratification. So, Batman and the Outsiders is delayed. Why is it delayed? Well, we don't know. We don't know. I've seen a few different, you know, things pop up on why that is the case. It seems like maybe editorial wanted to make some changes for whatever reason that we don't really know. And I find that interesting because oftentimes we want to know. And this is where I'm conflicted, because I would want to know why this is. Right? Like, are they changing it because of the way the CW Black Lightning show is being handled? They want the comic Black Lightning to be maybe a little closer to that. Or is it Cassie Kane, right, Orphan, because she's going to be a key character in the Birds of Prey and the whatever something something extraordinary Harley Quinn, some super ginormously long title, which I'm sure was a joke. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just look up the full title of the Birds of Prey movie. But she's going to be a key character in that. So do we want to kind of conform the views, the way that the characters represented in both of these types of formats? And that's why the changes are being made. Or is it because of some of the other stuff going on outside of the title that needs to fit into this particular book, right? So for example, Doomsday Clock. And I hate to talk about Doomsday Clock like once a month, but it feels like it happens. And part of the reason it happens is because that book is never on time. And we're going to get to that. But the book is never on time. And to me, Doomsday Clock, had it been on time, monthly, or just say bi-monthly, okay? If DC has said, we're going to put this out every 2 months, had it been that way and kept on schedule, I guarantee you that the DC universe would be an entirely different place. And I think I've done like a, if not a full rant episode on this particular topic, at least I've talked about it for, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes. On how DC Metal came about because Doomsday Clock was delayed. Now, that could be totally incorrect. So, by all means, I'm not saying that is a fact. I'm just saying the way that I feel like some of these things have played out. Because it seems like while the Metal story was in the works, because of the fact that Doomsday Clock was delayed, the DC Universe shifted towards that story because it was extremely popular. It sold very, very well. And so a lot of the DCU went in that direction to kind of deal with the aftermath of the Metal events. Whereas Doomsday Clock, something that was announced before Rebirth, had it continued on, it would have been exactly what we thought Rebirth was going to be. And you can go back and listen to one of the earlier episodes where I talk about, like, what was that? The Rebirth number one. And all the stuff that Geoff Johns has set up. And the changes that have been made since that would directly relate to Rebirth and to Doomsday Clock, but are no longer the case. I mean, think about the DC Universe, right? It's not long called DC Rebirth, whatever, Batman number one. It's DC Universe now, okay? And part of that is marketing and branding, of course, because now we have the DC Universe streaming service, which is great, even if I don't use it enough. More on that at some other time. I'm actually going to do an episode where I do a kind of a DC Universe 30 days later, even though it's more than 30 days. But there's been a lot of changes, right? Now, had Doomsday Clock been out on time every month, would we continue to have the tie-ins to the main universe? I think so. I mean, the last real big tie-in was with The Button, the crossover issue. What was it, 2-4 issues between Batman and The Flash? And by the way, there is an upcoming sequel to The Button. It's called like something Cold Case. It's coming out in March or February. It's in the solicits. All the solicits came out this past week for all the publishers, so check those out. But Williams is going to be writing that as well. So we're going to be heading back to that. And that's going to give Tom King about a month off to work on some secret TV project he's working on. And I don't know if that's going to be the States of America show that's already been announced or if it's something else. Or something related to the DC Universe app. We'll see. I'm sure we'll get some more details in the upcoming weeks and months. But that was the real, like, last big tie-in, right? Now we've got a lot of other stuff coming in. And I DC wants storytellers to tell the best stories, right? I think that's been kind of the mantra for a little while. But now it feels like that may not be the case anymore, right? Now that we've moved on to Metal being the big thing and everything having to tie into Metal, we had Justice League Odyssey, that had to be rewritten. You know, the artist had the book done, and I think like 3 issues were done before the book was supposed to come out, and the book was delayed because editorial felt the need to change things, because they needed to add additional elements into the story. That's not something that a smaller publisher would have the ability to do, number one, right? Because first of all, they would lose a ton of money by having to delay a book because of an editorial change. And why it is that Marvel and DC can't just get that right is really beyond me. And again, I understand things change. So if you're in that camp, look, I'm with you. I'm okay with things changing. Things change all the time. I understand that characters change. You know, you have this comic book publisher as part of a mega conglomerate of different kinds of media. And I totally understand that. But at the same time, don't make the comic books kind of a second rate citizen to whatever else you plan on doing. Because guess what? The people that have brought you to a place where you are able to create other types of media and expand it and bring these characters to the masses who don't read comics are comic book readers. And to be honest, and I've said this already in this podcast before, comic book readers that have been with you for decades, many, many decades. I myself included. I mean, I've been reading some of these books for 25, 30 years. And I'm sure many of you listening have been doing the same. Some of you are even a little bit older, so I've maybe been reading these books for 40 years or 50 years. I do have a listener who's almost 70, so I had to bring that up. But I think comic book publishers maybe sometimes forget that. And I get it's a whole big machine, and maybe we shouldn't get mad when things change. But why shouldn't we ask why things are changing? If a book is solicited, and the writer has written it, and the artist has already drawn the story, it seems to me like by this point, the book has gone to editorial at least once or twice, right? The writer would have to write the script, send it to editorial, editorial would make changes, it would go back to the writer would make changes, it would go back to the editorial would approve it, maybe it would go to the editor-in-chief, or maybe get put on Dan Didio's chair, and he would be like, okay, yep, this sounds good. And then it would go back to the writer, he makes some more changes, send it back to the artist would draw it. Maybe they talk about the process of the book. Maybe the artist has some changes he wants to make in the way the pages are laid out. And maybe that has a minor impact on the story. So it goes back to the writer makes the changes, it goes back to editorial, goes back to the writer, goes back to the artist. And then you have, you know, inker and letter and color, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It seems like by the time where you have multiple issues of a comic book completed, this particular version of the comic book has gone through at least a half a dozen, if not a dozen, or more hands. So why go on to finish this and solicit it and put it out and then realize, oh, well, we can't put it out because it doesn't fit our storytelling? There's something inherently wrong about that. Something inherently wrong. And that has nothing to do with it being okay for publishers to delay or cancel or push back a book. There's something inherently wrong in the process of creation if this is the case. And most of the writers, when they speak about this kind of thing, and artists and whatever else, of course, kind of have to hide what they truly feel about the process. Because, I mean, they're work for hire. So if they speak out about it, they're just going to be taken off the book. Somebody else will take the book. And I mean, this is a job, right? These guys aren't just writing comics because they love comics. I mean, hopefully they all love comics, but they write it because it's a job, or illustrate it, color it, whatever. And so if they speak out publicly and publicly denounce a particular person or publisher or process, then they won't be allowed to continue with the book. And so I get when we get some public facing acknowledgement of issues from some of the people involved in a comic, it's not always real talk. It's more like legal talk. Maybe we should call this podcast Legal Talk today. It's not going to be called that. So here's what Brian had to say about the book. The question was asked, "Hey Brian, I just read about Outsiders being momentarily canceled anything you can share about the situation sad face." And Brian said, "There's some in-universe stuff that needs more incorporation into the story. It's a push in the release, but from what I understand, everything is fine. Just taking more time to make the launch powerful." Now, I don't know what that means. There's some in-universe stuff going on that needs to be incorporated to the story. How much could have possibly changed in the couple of months that the story was being worked on that would warrant an in-universe change that needs to be incorporated into the story if these books are being done months in advance? I mean, you're soliciting books 3 months in advance. So you would hope that these books are being at least worked on, if not completed, by the time the books are solicited. What has happened at DC in the last 3 months that DC would not know about? that would lead to a change like this being done. That makes no sense to me. But whatever. There's some in-universe stuff that needs to be changed. I don't care what it is. I mean, I would love to know. But ultimately, it doesn't matter, because guess what? I don't write the comic, and I don't edit it, and I don't publish it. All I do is buy the book and talk about it. That's what I do. And that's probably what most of you listening to this do. I mean, I know that there's plenty of comic creators listening to the podcast, so I'm sure you are thinking in your mind right now, oh, if only I could tell you, Martin, and let me tell you, if only you could tell me. But I don't want you to tell me. I mean, I say I want to know, but I don't really want to know. But it seems like ultimately I'll just be disappointed. Everything is fine. We can only launch Outsiders in this iteration once, so it has to accomplish as much as possible in our book and beyond it. Okay. I mean, that's fair, right? You want your comic books to be the best possible iteration of these comic books that you can possibly make. That's how you write a good comic, right? I mean, obviously you need experienced creators working on the comic, but you want the creator to make it the best possible thing. Right, because Brian does seem genuinely excited for Batman and the Outsiders, as I am, but I'm not working on it, I'm just reading it. But he does seem genuinely excited. And so, of course, as a reader, we want to be excited, because when a writer is excited, we know that it's going to be great, hopefully. I mean, if the writer's good, which Brian is good, so there's that. But I find this whole interesting, you know, I don't even know what to think, man, right? So I want to be upset that it's delayed, but I want it to be the best it could be, but why delay it? I just don't understand that. I don't understand that. If you have some insight, by all means, feel free to share it with me at Geekvine on Twitter. You can send me a DM if you don't want to be made public. You can email comic or yell at comictalk.today and tell me all about it. And if you don't want me to talk about it on the podcast, I won't. If you don't want me to mention your name, I won't. But I'm curious. So feel free to send me some thoughts. All right, to wrap things up, there's a couple things I wanted to mention. There's some books missing from solicitations, some that don't really surprise me, some that are kind of, I don't know. I mean, I would say upsetting, but I'm not upset about this. From Marvel, Exiles seems to be ending at issue 12. Nothing's been solicited beyond 12. Exiles Volume 2 trade is coming out, collecting up to issue 12. So the assumption is the book will be gone then. That's kind of both sad and bittersweet, I guess is the word, because I wanted to love the book, because I love the original Exiles book, and of course this iteration has Blink in it, who is one of my top three Marvel mutants, and it didn't click with me. Saladin Ahmed was the one writing the book. He did fantastic, just absolutely amazing Black Bolt miniseries for Marvel, and this one just kind of didn't hit with me, so the book may be gone, we'll see. The one that kind of does make me a little sad is Domino has not been solicited past issue 10 in January, and I think Domino is top 5 Marvel books right now, and why that's the case, I don't know. I wonder if it has to do a little bit with some of the Lion Forge work that that Gail Simone is going to be doing. Maybe that's putting a lot on her plate, so I hope we see Domino back. And then on the DC side, it looks like the New Age of Heroes may be becoming the Age of Heroes of Days Past, because Curse of Brimstone is ending with issue 12, Sideways is ending with 13, and I think Sideways is going to be being worked into something else. I can't remember. I heard a rumor if it was like Justice League or maybe Justice League Dark or something like that. He's going to be worked into the main universe because Dan DiDio really likes the character, so. And then Immortal Man, New Challengers have finished with issue 6. Unexpected will end with number 8 in January. So all we'll have left after this first year-ish of New Age of Heroes is Silencer, Terrifics, and Damage. And that is exactly the 3 books I predicted will still be around when I talked about these original solicitations before any of these books came out a year ago. So interesting stuff. If you haven't had a chance to check out the final Aquaman trailer, by all means, go check that out. It looks absolutely incredible. I cannot wait to see this. And I know they've done like 300,000 trailers for this movie, and I normally only watch like one, maybe two trailers. I've watched every single one for this movie. This final one came out this past week. It looks amazing. If you've seen the other ones, just forget the other ones. Go watch this one. This is the trailer, and it looks awesome. Jason Momoa's got the OG Aquaman suit at the end of it. It looks absolutely awesome, and I can't wait to see it. If you are an Amazon Prime subscriber, oddly enough, you can go and get tickets at, what is it, Adam Films? Is that the website? AdamTickets.com. And you can get tickets for an advanced screening of Aquaman on December 15th, which is 1 week earlier than everyone else will get to see it. I think that's really fascinating. I'm not going to talk about it today. I will talk about this a little bit on an episode next week. But go to AdamTickets.com, and if you're a Prime subscriber, get your tickets to watch it early. I already bought my tickets. I'm going to be going on the 15th. It's going to be amazing. I cannot wait to see this movie. That's going to wrap up this episode of Comic Talk Today. Thank you all for listening, and thank you all for still being around to listen to this podcast. You already know where to find me, so I'm not going to say that again, but I'll be back tomorrow, which I'll do a little catch-up episode, catching up on comics from 2 weeks ago. I'll catch you then.